Hello and welcome to you all. It is good to be with you on this day. This is Dr. Michelle Townsend Grove, and I am with the Reverend Samuel Felderman again for another week of the podcast UU Bible Study, where we are following Reverend Dr. Wilda C. Gaffney's A Woman's Lectionary for the Whole Church. And we're looking at year W, which has been an absolutely amazing journey that looks at both named and unnamed women in the Jewish and Christian scriptures. This week, a part of the lectionary will be Lent 2. We got off to Lent with a rousing start last week, and now we are continuing with Lent 2, following the stories, the creation stories in Genesis. So we're going to start this week, as we always do, with the reading of the psalm. This is a time to center and reflect and just let the words rush over you. Samuel's going to read the Psalm 92, verses 1 to 5 and 12 to 15 from the New International Version. And then I'll read it from Gaffney's translation. All right, Samuel, it's good to be with you again. Welcome.
Well, hello, Michelle. It is so good to be with you also. And friends, welcome to this week's episode. As stated, our psalm for this week is Psalm chapter 92, verses 1 through 5, and 12 through 15. It is good to praise the Lord and make music to your name, O Most High. To proclaim your love in the morning and your faithfulness at night. To the music of the 10-stringed lyre and the melody of the harp. For you make me glad by your deeds, O Lord. I sing for joy at the works of your hands. How great are your works, O Lord. How profound your thoughts. The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will bear fruit in old age and will stay fresh and green, proclaiming the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no wickedness in him.
And now you are invited to hear the same psalm, 92, verses 1 to 5 and 12 to 15 from Gaffney's version, which is found in A Woman's Lectionary for the Whole Church, year W. It is good to give thanks to the ageless God, to sing praises to your name, Most High, to declare your faithful love in the morning and your trustworthiness by night. Upon the 10 strings and the harp, upon the murmurings of the lyre. For you have made me glad, wellspring of life, by your work. At the works of your hands, I sing for joy. How great are your works, womb of creation. Your designs are so profound. A righteous woman or man flourishes like a palm tree and grows like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the house of she who is holy. In the courts of our God, they flourish, still producing fruit in their elder years, fat with sap and evergreen. They declare that the mighty God is upright. She is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in her. My friends, we invite you now to sit with the words of both of these translations. Let the similarities and differences, let the song of each be in your heart during a time of meditation. We will ring you into meditation, have some moments of silence, and then ring back into our time together. Let us be in meditation together. Oh, my friends, it is always a rich experience to hear these words, even if you've read them a thousand times, to hear them in different voices. So we appreciate your willingness to journey with us as we listen and reflect on the psalm. As is with the ritual of each week with this podcast, we are now going to dig into the Jewish scripture for this lectionary Lent too. And this week we're looking at Genesis 3, 1 to 7. This is a continuation from last week when we read the last part of Genesis 2. So now we have the privilege of hearing those words. Today is going to be a little different. Samuel's going to read Gaffney's translation, which is beautiful. And then I'm going to continue the ritual that we started last week on looking at Stephen Mitchell's translation. Since Stephen Mitchell comes from a Jewish background, we thought that having both the womanist translation and perspective, as well as the Jewish on these texts, would be a profound experience. So, Samuel, are you ready to start us off?
Yes, friends, hear these words from Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, taken from Wilda Gaffney's translation. Now the serpent had more naked intelligence than any other animal in the field that the sovereign God had made. And it said to the woman, "Indeed, did God say you shall not eat from the tree of the garden?" Now the woman said to the serpent, "From the fruit of any tree in the garden we may eat, though of the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, God said, 'You too shall not eat and shall not touch it, lest ye die.'" Then the serpent said to the woman, "You will certainly not die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and the two of you will be like God, knowing both good and evil." So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her man who was with her, and he ate also. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and so they sewed fig leaves together and made loincloths for themselves. Thus ends the reading.
And now, my friends, hear chapter Genesis 3, verses 1 to 7 from Stephen Mitchell's translation in his book, Genesis, a new translation of the classic biblical stories. Now, the serpent was more cunning than any creature the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, "Did God really say that you're not allowed to eat from any tree in the garden?" And the woman said, "We are allowed to eat from any tree in the garden. It's just the tree in the middle of the garden that we must not eat from, because God said, if we eat from it or even touch it, you die." And the serpent said, "You will not die. God knows that as soon as you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like gods, knowing good and evil." And when the woman saw that the tree was good to eat from and beautiful to look at, she took one of its fruits and ate it and gave it to her husband, and he ate too. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made loincloths for themselves. Thus ends this reading. Oh, here's the story. Two very different, very poetic, and yet profound translations for a story that is steeped in all kinds of questions and meaning. Samuel, what you thinking?
Well, Michelle, there is perhaps no story either biblical or otherwise, that has had more impact on Western culture than this story. Genesis chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, contains what Christian theologians, at least, have traditionally known as the fall, the narrative of the fall from grace. The fall story is complicated and impacts to this day every single aspect of our lives in the Western world. This story touches everything we do, from our economics to our politics to gender issues to sexual issues to issues around race, xenophobia, you name it. This story is where our narrative begins. Last week, we talked about when we were looking at Genesis chapter 2 of this idea of that story being about trust being established, that humanity found itself. God goes through this process of creating the animals and creating the world, all trying to find the perfect companion for the first human. And in the end, woman is made, and we have this beautiful story of community, of humanity being together and trust, this trust being established between them, and the whole of creation flourishing because of that trust. This week, while there are a lot of things we can talk about in this text, one of the things that I want to highlight is this is the story of trust broken. While so much emphasis is put on this idea of Eve eating the apple and the snake and all of these different things, I think one of the saddest verses, perhaps, in the whole Bible is actually the verse that we ended with, verse 7. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, it says, and they knew that they were naked. And so they sewed fig leaves together to make clothes for themselves. In chapter 2, we were able to see this idea of nakedness as this thing that meant that they were totally in trust with one another, that there was nothing that was necessary to hide between humanity. The humans were able to be in each other's presence fully uncovered in the physical sense, but also in the emotional, mental, and spiritual sense. They were a community that saw each other completely. And with this story, at the end of this story, we have this moment where that trust is broken. Suddenly, Adam and Eve are aware of their own shortcomings. They're aware of the way that they look. Suddenly, they have shame around who they are and what they're doing. And so, while we read this, of course, as clothing, but you could read this as so the first barrier between people was made. And this story echoes through our ages when you think of the barriers that we put up between ourselves and others now. Think of walls that are built as a barrier between us and those who we do not consider part of us. Think of apartheid, think of war, think of all of these things that we do, all of these barriers, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual barriers that we put between ourselves and others. This is a story of trust being broken. But the unfortunate aspect of this story is as time has gone on and this story has been read and interpreted and used, the overwhelming majority of public work, of theologians, of political spheres, of all these things throughout human history, has used this story not only to point out that we are broken, that trust has been broken, but that because that trust is broken, we now have to do things in a different way. This is used as the excuse for the walls and the separation and the hierarchy. And anything that's done is done because we say, well, the world is broken, so we have to live this way because the world is broken. We lock our doors, we build walls, we do all of these things because trust has been broken. And so this is the reality that we live into. And in fact, this is a big part of what happens in the New Testament. The author, when we are thinking about the creation of the church, and when we look at the reality that for most of Christian history, and even still in many contexts, women are not allowed to serve as pastors, they're not allowed to serve as deacons, priests, etc. And the reason is this story. The author of 1 Timothy, which is a book in the New Testament, actually points to this story. The author will say this in chapter 2 of second of I'm sorry, of the first letter of Timothy to Timothy. The author says this: "Let a woman learn in all silence and full submission. I permit no woman to teach or have authority of a man over a man. She is to keep silent, for Adam was made first, and then Eve. And Adam was not deceived by the snake, but Eve was." The author of the book of Timothy is saying to us, because women were deceived in the beginning, they cannot be trusted to run the church. Because we have broken trust, we have to exist in that brokenness, and we have to structure power around that brokenness. Now, I want to point out here, this is the reason why I and many scholars no longer believe that Paul actually wrote the book of 1 Timothy. He is the one that was accredited with that for many, many years. But when we look at Paul's other writings in Galatians, for example, Paul has a different way of seeing the world. He says, now, because of the restoration that has come, there is no more male or female, or Jew or Greek, or slave or free. Everyone is equal because of the gospel of Jesus Christ. In Ephesians, he will talk about the walls of separation being torn down and doing things in a new way. What Paul is inviting us into in his epistles is a different vision than what the author of 1 Timothy is inviting us into. Timothy is saying, because of this brokenness, we have to build structures to keep ourselves safe. And this is a narrative that we hear over and over again in the world that we live in today. Because of the brokenness, we must have hierarchy. We must have walls. We must have an army. We must hoard our wealth and our power. Because things are broken, we have to look out for ourselves. But what I would want us to reflect on is whether or not that is the only narrative that we can accept. You see, what St. Paul will say says in Galatians, and what he says in Ephesians, and what the prophets of ancient and modern times, think of what we read about in Isaiah, but also think about the words of Martin Luther King Jr. and these other voices have brought forward to us, is restoration is possible. There's another way of being. Yes, trust has been broken, but trust can also be restored. And do we want to be people, as we sit here today reading this text, do we want to be people who say, well, the world is broken, and so we have to live with that and adjust for it? Or do we want to be people that say, the world is broken, but we can make it better? And I think that is the question that this text is asking us today.
Wow. Samuel, that is absolutely Brilliant. And I think that the theme in which you have started last week and you're continuing through this week about restoration, created, restoration, destroyed is profound. And I look forward to see where you go with this. And I think that that's a good preaching prompt for anybody who might be preaching on this. But even if you're not preaching on this, that is an incredible living prompt. How do we shift how we live, how we relate, what we do in this world so that we can start to shift the narrative, shift the paradigm? That would be a gift. So thank you for that. In addition to that, and I think that's the main theme for today. And on that though, I also want to take a few moments to talk about some of the characters in this story, because they are all profound and they're all misjudged. And you're right, that misjudgment has laid this foundation where we have built a society over thousands of years. And it's this story and other similar stories in other cultures that for some reason do that. So, for example, in this story, we have Eve, who has been demonized. We have the serpent, who has been demonized. And Dr. Gaffney, in her section on preaching notes, uses the word demonized. So I think that's very profound for us to lift up what she is bringing out of this as well. And to be fair, Adam is seen as an innocent bystander. And yet, are any of those true? Is the serpent actually the pre-runner to Satan, or Satan in costume? Or is it really just one of the animals that is in the garden having a conversation? And like we have conversations today around what if, or I wonder, or I bet that's not true. How we push boundaries? Wasn't the serpent also pushing boundaries? Thank you, Dr. Gaffney, for also bringing up the wonder questions around boundaries in this story. And I encourage you all to read more from Gaffney on that. So here is the serpent testing instead of tempting, as Gaffney would say. Here's the serpent engaging in dialogue, and the woman, Eve, on the other side, doing the same back and forth with the wonder and getting things a little mixed up. Because if you read what God said back at the beginning of chapter two in that area, and what God actually said, wait, did I get that right? It was in chapter two, right? When he made the garden. Yes. Okay. Sorry. I always have to check myself. I get details screwed up sometimes. So bear with me. So, and then what Eve says God said, right, in the story, there are some differences, and it would be good to look at those. So the translation in the story, the evolution of the story from two to three is not exactly the same. So here is the serpent being misjudged. Here is Eve, the woman, being misjudged and therefore being doomed for eternity to be the lesser, to be the server of men. And then on that other side, here is Adam. And the Stephen Mitchell translation does not say explicitly he was there with her. And yet, most other translations do. So it'd be interesting. I kind of want to go back and look at the Hebrew on that one and do my own analysis. So here it is, though, in most translations, like Gaffney's translation, Adam was there in the conversation, maybe not talking, but still engaged. Adam is not freed from responsibility in this story. Whether he was there or not, he is not freed. He knows the tree. He was shown that tree by God. right? It is the one in the center of the garden. You don't fool Adam that easily, do you? And if you do, isn't that an argument for then the man not being the one in power? There's all kinds of questions we should be asking here. And I would raise those questions and then put it in the frame of what you're talking about, in the fact that this was broken and that it is time, if we are going to go towards restoration, how do we reframe? And one of the ways that we can do that is by reframing how we look at the characters, their motives, their identity, their relationship at the very beginning. Anything else? Or is that enough for one day?
Well, we could, and we say this almost every week, we could spend hours, if not days, on
So
this.
true. So
There
true.
is so many ways in which this text touches every part of our lives. It touches so many parts of our history. It raises so many interesting questions that need to be wrestled with. But I think one of the things that, no, I want to take that out and start that differently.
Easily done.
I think especially Michelle and friends, as you listen along, I invite you to remember that we still have one more week in Genesis, that next week we are continuing this story. And unfortunately, next week, I think our text will show how quickly brokenness becomes a way of life. And we will also see how quickly we go from being community, and how Adam and Eve go from being community to being individuals separated from one another in some big ways. And there's a lot of questions that we could ask about this story. But I think what I would want to leave us with, and Michelle, I think the things that you bring up are so important to this question, is, do we want to be people who are living in Genesis chapter 2, or do we want to be people who are living in Genesis chapter 3? Do we want to be people of wholeness and community? Or do we want to be people full of blame and full of shame and full of pointing fingers and full of fear? Who do we want to be when we as humanity grow up? Who do we want to be? And in this season of Lent, this season that's set aside for reflection and penitence and preparation for Easter, whether you are part of the Christian tradition, whether you are part of any tradition, what I think this story is leading us into is, who is it that we want to be? How can we be the people we want to be? So that's what I would leave us with this week, is who do we want to be, and how do we need to change the way we live to meet those goals, to meet those aspirations? Friends, so much has been here. So much is here, and so much is lingering. We invite you to go back over this text and sit with it and be with it. And we invite you to join us again next week as we take the rest of chapter 3 and dive in and see what's left for us as we reach the end of this story. We look forward to seeing you then. Thank you so much for joining us this week for the UU Bible Study Podcast. We will see you soon.
Thank you all.